Pushkin. At first glance, the psych rock band Krungbin may seem hard to pin down. They're a three-piece multiracial band from Houston, Texas. Two of their members always appear in dark black wigs. And the pronunciation of their band name has sent a lot of people straight to Google. Krungbin's music, on the other hand, is easy to understand. It's undeniable. That's So We Won't Forget, from Krungbin's fourth album, Mordecai. The band is made up of Laura Lee on bass, Mark Spear on guitar, and Donald DJ Johnson on drums. Since forming in 2015, Krungbin have taken off on the festival circuit worldwide, which makes sense for a band whose name in Thai means flying engine. In my conversation with Krungbin, you'll hear how their funk-infused surf rock sound is inspired in part by multicultural diffusion. They also talk about how disappointed they were when their spring tour with Tame Impala was canceled, but also how sheltering in place has given them a much-needed break from the road. This is Broken Record, liner notes for the digital age. I'm Justin Richmond. Here's my conversation with Laura Lee, Mark Spear, and DJ of Krungbin. Krungbin, I feel like I just learned how to pronounce. I've been listening to you guys since 2015, and I think I just now, I was worried I was pronouncing it wrong this entire time right now, but I think I finally got it.
I mean, at the time, though, it was a very simple way of naming the band, because I had a bootleg Rosetta Stone for Thai, and it's like in the first five words you learn. And it was fun to say, and we needed a band name stat, and we didn't think we would be where we are now, so.
You can call it whatever you want. No one's going to care, right? I mean, I've been in countless bands. It's like, dude, I'm not going to make it, you know, no big deal. Just call it what you want. Play what you want.
Although I do feel like we did have the foresight that we didn't want the, like, website to be taken.
And since it's a, you know, anglicized way of spelling that Thai word, depending on who's writing it, it might look completely different, because the only way to actually write it is to write it in Thai. So what we're writing is the, you know, an anglicized version of that word.
It feels like you guys, in a way, go back to like an old school band, you know, where you would just get in a room and because there's not necessarily, until the new record, lyrics, you would just, I think the listener would think, a lot of jamming was happening to hash out the songs.
That was another thing that kind of informed the, you know, the start of the band and what we were going to do. Is like, I didn't want to have a bunch of drum machines and sequencers and backing tracks and laptops on stage, or have to depend on that when we were like perform these tunes. It's like, we use the technology to compose and to write, you know, the whole like cut and paste, and basically sampling ourselves and flipping things like that around. But when it comes down to it, we play it. If we can't play it with three people, then that's not happening. You know, there's some percussion parts and keyboard parts that happen on the records, but it's like that stuff isn't really, you know, crucial. It's like just ear candy. So if we go play these songs live and there's no keyboard part, it's fine. You know, we don't need to hire or play to a backing track in order to make this work. You know, we can do it with three people. But you got to give yourself some kind of limitation. Otherwise, it's kind of overwhelming, you know, the amount of ideas that you can do. So limit what you do, and it kind of informs what you do, right? Like, what you don't do informs what you do.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think emotionally, it's like the band really started those few years when we met every Tuesday night for dinner, and our bond was certainly solidified during that time. So the three of us were a unit. And, you know, to add another component in there throws off the whole situation.
Yeah, that's tough. Plus, I mean, how do you arrange us on stage with four people? You know, we got Deej in the middle. You know, I'm on the left, Laura Lee's on the right. That's a nice power triangle, you know. But then you add a fourth person. Where are you going to put that person? If it was the lead singer, obviously they would be in the front, but we don't have a lead singer. So where do you put that fourth person? Do you put him behind me? Put him behind Laura Lee? You know, now it's just unbalanced. So if you were going to add anybody, you have to add two. So you have five on stage. You still have that power, you know, that symmetry happening. That's very important. You know, I pay attention to this stuff. It doesn't look right. If
how early did the stagecraft like come in? The wigs and the outfits and just sort of the presence on stage.
Day one.
First show. We've always worn the stuff. We've always tried to have, you know, a look or a vibe on stage, you know, since day one.
Yeah. That first show was like, to me, I compare it to like a bride getting ready because everything was so important to me, you know, the hair and the shoes and the outfit. I probably spent, you know, my cash for weeks on that show because it could have been my only show. But yeah, the wigs were important and nobody knew who we were in Houston. Mark had been in so many bands in Houston. Everyone would have known who he was up there and nobody knew who he was. We were like aliens.
Yeah, we wanted to come fresh, you know. Didn't want to have anybody like, oh, this guy's been in this band before, you know. Just leave that out the door.
No expectation for what they're about to see.
And exactly. DJ, while had been super prevalent in the Houston like hip hop scene, hadn't really played the like indie band hipster kind of situation. So we were all relatively unknown in that scene.
I remember for a while we were trying to like be kind of rocky, you know, we started like kind of like adapt some of our tunes to be like louder and like more rock, you know, because the bands we were playing with were like loud, you know, and we were quiet, like, you know, that's part of what makes the KB recording sound like they do is because we're playing so quietly. But that doesn't really translate well when you're playing in like a dingy, you know, kind of like punk club with like loud bands. So we play to the room now. We did then and we still do.
I feel like a lot's made of like kind of the world influence with you guys. Were you guys listening to a bunch of world music and thinking we want to also bring in some of these vibes? Or is it just you guys listening to everything and things are just creeping in, whether it's a Latin sound or Thai?
I can say this. Like I said, I met Mark in 2004. Mark has always listened to music that wasn't in English. I didn't understand it back then. I grew up listening to music that was in my own language. I can understand the words, you know, and every now and then there was an instrumental cut. But he had this, you know, entire library on his computer or, you know, in his iTunes that was just stuff that's not in English. I remember like maybe early on, he played some Thai funk tune and it felt like James Brown. I'm a huge James Brown guy, like that 60s funk sound. And it sounded like that, but you had just a Thai vocalist, you know, singing over the top of it. I'm like, wow, this is cool. And I really started to connect how, you know, things from other parts of the world connected with the music that was happening, you know, in the US at the same time. And, you know, how it was kind of, you know, there was this crosstalk.
Yeah.
Mark is a huge, huge influence in, you know, what Krungbin is known to be like a world, you know, music inspired band. I mean, I would say it started like from his music taste.
Yeah. I mean, 100%. We also liked this like conversation that was happening between like the East and the West and that Thai music was influenced by, you know, by James Brown, by the Shadows, by the Beatles, and then they play their version of it. And if we're then inspired by their take, the Eastern take on Western music, then, you know, there's this cool meta kind of thing that's happening.
It's a game of telephone, man. Love that stuff. Cultural diffusion.
Absolutely. That's what I love about you guys. If you listen to a lot of music from around the world, like if you listen to African music, you'll find a Cuban song that sounds just like a West African song. And then you'll find out that also Fela Kuti was listening to Cuban music. And then so there's always this meta thing happening with all kinds of genres that you don't really think about because you just think about it as being like the blues. But then there's, you know, like an African version of blues or like a Thai version of blues. And you guys have 100% just said, yeah, like, we're going to be in conversation with all of that at once, you know?
Yeah, I want to make that conversation. Like, I mean, Laura Lee, what's that style you were like obsessed with for a second? Boleros.
Oh, yeah. Still, right? Am.
There's like, it's just these, one of those like Latin rhythms that just gets everywhere. It was like, it's basically the reggaeton of its day, you know?
Right.
So you get like Mexican boleros, which are probably influenced in a way by Spanish music. And then it makes its way into like South America and the Caribbean. And there's definitely boleros in Africa. And there's absolutely boleros and a scene for bolero in Vietnam, like in Southeast Asia, probably from records brought in from service people back in, you know, the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, right. But I was going to try to make a playlist or a mix just of the song Sabor a Mi, because there's like 1 million covers of it. So I was going to try to do a mix just of that song.
It's a standard.
Yeah. Which was my grandma's favorite song. So I'm sure that has something to do with the way I interpret it. But then found this whole Vietnamese pocket of the song, wrote Mark thinking that I was going to blow his mind. But obviously Mark, you know, already knew.
he was already plugged in.
But dude, like, we hear that stuff. Like, every time we go to a pho restaurant on tour, what do you hear?
Totally.
Even though we might not make that connection at that moment, we're like, this sounds like the Shadows with like a kind of a sweet, like Latin kind of beat going on, you know? And that's kind of what it is.
Yeah.
You know, there's this like kind of twangy guitar. There's like a MIDI keyboard. There's this like person singing, and it's got that bolero rhythm underneath it, you know? And it's so cool.
So cool.
That's that diffusion, man.
We sort of resented the fact that we got called Thai funk, because we're not Thai and we're definitely not Thai funk. And the bands that we were listening to that were Thai funk, they weren't called American funk, you know, when they came out.
Right.
It was
right.
called shadow music because of the shadows. And that's a much cooler way of like, I don't know. I love to be a shadow band.
Yeah, that's the coolest. And like, when you go back and listen to that first record, I mean, yeah, there's some tunes that are obviously influenced by all the Thai music we were listening to, because we were definitely listening to a lot of it. But I don't know if I would call Mr. White a Thai funk song. To me, I think we just wanted to, we always try to put a song on the record that sounds like Roy Ayers, because we love Roy Ayers, you know? Little Joe and Mary. Specifically, I'm trying to sound like Franco. Like, I want to sound like one of those awesome, really just really pretty guitar, you know, African, like Western and Central African stuff. Like, I love that business, man. Balls and Pins, that's just like classic psych rock, you know? So it's like, I reject the notion of calling us a Thai funk band. I don't think that's fair to us or to Thai funk artists. Right. There's more to us than what's going on with that. Like, I want to play everything, you know? I want to figure out a way to put it into what we do.
We're listening to Mr. White, the Roy Ayers inspired track from Krungbin's debut album, The Universe Smiles Upon You. We'll be back with the band after a break. Before we jump back into my interview with Krungbin, let's hear a bit of the song First Class from their latest release, Mordecai. Speaking of the Roy Ayers vibe, the first track on this new album, First Class, kind of captured that feeling to me a lot.
That's absolutely intentional, man. Like, yeah, I was like, I want to play. It's so intentional. Like, I wanted to play big Roy Ayers chords, you know, on guitar. That was the whole thing.
There's a production thing about Roy Ayers too, and I'm not savvy enough to understand it, but there's a certain sound to his recordings too that I feel like a certain like space involved or something that you guys have figured out, and I feel like it's kind of pretty present in, at least in this new one.
So when we do vocals, we all sing together at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, and I really like that about Roy Ayers stuff. It sounds like he's got everybody in the band kind of singing at the same time. Not unlike, you know, Santana from back in the 60s and 70s, where the whole band singing at the same time in unison, like no one's trying to do any crazy harmonies. And it's just like, this is the melody. We're all going to sing it together. War does that too.
Yeah.
I was like, I want to do that so that when we sing together, it sounds big and full, but none of us want to be lead singers. You know, and if we got a lead singer, well, then it would pretty much be about the lead singer, not about the band. We just wanted to be about the music. So that's why we started doing it that way. And to me, psychoacoustically, if you hear a bunch of people singing a melody, you're going to want to also sing this melody with this bunch of people. It's like, hey, let's all sing this together. And that's absolutely intentional, is that kind of like that way of bringing everyone into it.
I hadn't considered that, but you're 100% right. It makes it one automatically just a more communal vibe. Like we're, you know, like you guys are one unit, one, and it makes it like a sing-along. So it also makes like the person listening feel like they're involved. Like you want to automatically jump in. Yep.
Even if it's just do, 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 na, 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 whatever.
Right. What made you guys on the new record decide to throw more? I mean, there's been some vocals on previous records, but there's definitely more on this one. Was there the thought that it might be fun to stretch out and do some more of that? Or did it just happen naturally while writing?
Yeah, it happened naturally. I think it's a natural progression. I mean, I think there was a big deal made out of it when we did a lot of the press stuff this time around, as if we never had vocals on one of our records before, which we have since album one. But yeah, it just so happened as it was a path that we went down. Normally we record everything in the barn. And once that part of the procedure is done, we go back into the studio and you see what you have. And sometimes you go back and songs sound complete and they're finished and they don't need anything outside of some, you know, light vocals for texture or, you know, percussion, or we'll bring in, you know, one of our friends to come and play on something. But this time around, things needed vocals. And thankfully, Laura Lee had some, you know, some stuff scribbled down and some ideas to pull from. And I personally think it came together beautifully.
Laura, was the scribbled stuff, was that with a thought for using it for a song, or was it just?
No.
Just a scribble?
Purely word vomit, journal style, you know, writing. But I did feel a burst of energy right before we went into the studio when I wrote all this stuff. And felt like I had lived a life of adventures and stories, and they were worth writing down. So I did. So I tried, and it worked. I think you know, Mark sort of hinted at it earlier, but one of the things with this record was that we went into the studio with time booked and, you know, paying our engineer and time studio stuff. But it was in between touring, heavy touring, and we didn't have any time prior to going into the barn to write. So we literally went in with nothing, and it was hard. It's hard to just switch off tour and switch into writing mode. You know, I know, like, I've been starting to write this week, and I have to give myself minimum 4 hours because it's going to take potentially 2 hours just to get in the zone. So, you know, minimum 4 hours. And this was like 2 weeks, record an album with nothing written. And you know, Steve, our engineer, always says you finish an album because you run out of time or you run out of money. And, you know, we ran out and we made an album, but we spent the majority of our time on the record in post. And so the words and the lyrics were something we could do in post, whereas the bass guitar and drums we record in the barn, and that's part of Krungbin ethos. So we had to stick to those rules that we gave ourselves. So the things we could add, you know, one of them was words, and that's part of how that development happened on this particular round. But we love it, and you know, like DJ was mentioning, that it's been such a point of chat during the interviews we've had. And it's so hilarious when you think about it. It's like, you're talking about lyrics. Most of the time, yeah, they're in songs. It's like, right, it's like the big deal is that Krungbin put words on a song. I don't know. It's just funny that like the big Krungbin reveal is like, you know, time. If you had more time, you know.
I loved the Time You and Me too, man. Such a cool disco vibe on that, or, you know, like kind of like boogie vibe on it.
Oh, thank you.
That comes, I think, from us, you know, being on the road for so long, and like we would take, you know, whatever break we could. And one of our favorite spots to go to is a festival in Croatia called Love International. And it's basically just like a DJ fest, you know, but the kind of music that's being played, at least at the, you know, parties that we would be going to, is like very kind of disco, post-disco, boogie, extended break, kind of like John Morales, Larry Levan kind of vibe. It was like, oh, dude, man, I really want to. I'm sitting here like at Barbarella at like 5 a.m. in the morning. Man, I would like really would love to have a song on the next record that like has like an extended disco break. That'd be awesome, you know. And that, so that's that's what we did. Really wanted to have that going on. And at some point during the recording of the vocals of that, we were like, dude, why don't we just like put That's Life in as many different languages as we can during this like breakdown? And so we started calling up all of our friends from all over the world and like try to get, you know, how can we say this in the right way?
Yeah. We knew that there must be an equivalent of the expression "that's life" in most languages. Life. You know, we knew "c'est la vie," and we figured if we knew "that's life" and "c'est la vie," that there must be more. And you know, we put out text messages. You know, called everyone we knew that spoke different languages, and we're like, "Is there a 'that's life'?" And sure enough, you know, yes.
And the lyrics are really cool, and it's super percussive, like you were saying, Laura. Like, I mean, I love that it's short sentences. It's not like, there's not like clauses hanging on from 1 meter to the next. It's just super, it's just such a tight song and really cool.
Yeah, I mean, that the lyric writing for that song was very much like an exercise in when in doubt, subtract.
Yeah.
So the lyrics got simpler and simpler as, you know, time went on.
I think the lyrics of that song ended up being prophetic. I mean, as soon as we went into quarantine, like I was, you know, going back, listening to the lyrics. And I'm like, this is exactly what everyone's doing right now. Everyone has all this time and everyone's mm-hmm. timing like children time and, you know, just living life.
That's Time, You and I, from Krungbin's new album. We'll be back with DJ Laura and Mark after this break.
Here's the rest of my conversation with Krungbin.
You guys have really made a name for yourselves as like a crazy good live band. And I can attest, you guys are really great live. I mean, everyone is in this space at the moment, but I think it might be nice for people to hear from a band like you guys who do tour so consistently, what it's like not being able to tour right now, you know?
For us, it came at a good time, honestly, because we've been hitting it hard, really, really hard for the last 4 years. And we just finished the record and we were due to go right back out on the road in April. We were supporting Tame Impala on his run in Australia and New Zealand. So yeah, that was like the first thing that got canceled when everything happened. I think the thing that I miss most is outside of connecting with, you know, people and our fans is just hanging out with my friends on the road. That's the thing that you really realize you miss the most, because we spent the last 4 years just hanging out together. I miss that.
Yeah. I never thought I'd long for a backstage sofa, but I do, you know?
Yeah.
Some wasas and avocados and
some cocoa water.
I have that here, but it's different. Yeah.
Something different about drinking a tequila soda that's just been sitting on top of the amp for the past 30 minutes. You know, it's like that's something real nostalgic about that.
I feel like I'm trying to just be where I am and not yearn too much, because it can be a slippery slope when you get into that headspace. But I think it's helpful that we're not on the road whilst everyone is not on the road. You know, if other people were touring and we were sitting at home, I don't think it would last very long. As much as I, you know, specifically, but everyone I think needed a break from the road. Festivals were happening right now. You know, it would be rough.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I've gone back recently and watched some Krungbin live performances, and it's like, wow, that's a lot. It's a lot to feel on a regular basis that we're not feeling, you know, and it's great because we're feeling other things, but what a rush, you know?
Were you getting awesome. The feeling watching the video?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm an emotional mess most of the time, but that was it was pretty intense watching it. And it's awesome. It's like, look what we did, you know? So cool. Yeah, we made something and we crafted it, and so proud of it. It's our awesome project, awesome everything. It's given me so much life. And even for right now, it just being the record and it just being shows that happened before, it's a beautiful thing to watch.
Does it feel weird or bad or any particular way to have just released a record and not be able to sort of go play it for people or promote it in the traditional sort of way by going to play? And
this is awesome. I love being able to chill at my house with my gal and, you know, like make Italian food every night and do yoga in the morning and go on hikes and not have to like sound check and then go to a hotel for like a cat nap and then go back. And then, you know, I love touring, man. Don't get me wrong. It's awesome. But dude, this is tight. And we don't have to support the record right now. We can actually give, you know, the audience time to like digest it. So when we do come out, they actually know the music. Like, that's way better. Yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it was something I definitely said a lot was, you know, the last record we put out, we were kind of already on tour, but then we put it out and you're supposed to, quote unquote, play songs from the new record, but nobody knows them yet. And you know, some of them, like Maria Tambien, it's a banger. So it's going to be fun, even if you don't know it. But other songs, you kind of need to let simmer for a while before you play them. So it will be fun coming back whenever that is. But also, I kind of needed more time to practice singing and playing those bass lines at the same time. So thank you, time.
Were you considering when you were laying the tracks down, you're thinking, well, we might add words over this or I don't know, maybe you decided that in post or whatnot. Were you considering what bass lines you were playing so that you could think like, can I pull this off? You know, because it's that's a lot to.
Mark's smiling at me on Zoom because every time this happens in the studio, I'm like, you know what? It's for the record. Let's worry about the record sounding good. And when it's time to play live, we'll figure it out. And he's like, it's going to be hard for you. You know, it's going to be hard. We should think about this. And
me too. And I'm trying to make my job easy. Like, why do you think I got rid of all those pedals and all those like laptop stuff? It's like, no, keep it simple, easy. Get up there and make some music.
But, you know, it, when you're in the studio, it's about the integrity of the record. And I That's knew that even if it was hard, it's just practice. Like, it is just practice and you can make it happen. It might be painful and long, but with enough practice, you can tap your head and rub your stomach at varying speeds at the same time.
It's true. Are you getting it under your fingers more now?
You know, I took a break from playing, period, when quarantine hit, because I honestly, I assumed life would go back more quickly than it has, but I was kind of like, this might be the first and only time in a long time that I do not have to play, and I'm just going to take a break and cook and, you know, do some other things. But I started playing again, and I definitely haven't been playing Krungbin songs. In a way, it just doesn't feel like the right time yet. I don't know.
That's fair.
I don't know how to explain it. It's definitely like emotionally related, but it's like, I don't know when I'm going to be playing those songs professionally and with my band. And so there's something a little bit like bittersweet about playing them on my own right now. So I kind of feel like if I just play that, at least I will have some things in my fingers. Yeah. And when it's time to really grind and rehearse, then it'll be that time.
And you guys are, Laura, you kind of hinted at it earlier that you're writing stuff now. Are you guys trying to write stuff just for fun, or are you guys actually trying to write something to write something?
Well, per like reflection of, you know, this album and how, you know, there's always room for improvement, even if you make something you're super proud of. But the one place we didn't have time on the record was pre-production. And right now we kind of have nothing but time for pre-production. It doesn't necessarily mean we will be as productive as we are without it. But since we have this time, in theory, it would be nice to begin to write some stuff so that when we go into the studio next time, we actually have songs.
Earlier, we were talking about how it's like kind of not fair for you guys to call yourselves a Thai funk group or something, which you don't. Do you guys ever worry about any sort of cultural appropriation criticism or just feeling like you're dipping too far into this thing or pulling too much from this particular thing and that it's going to come across as insensitive?
But we're not trying to be anything we're not. It's like, we are who we are. We are from Houston. And we're representing what we know.
I think a lot of it goes back to the thing I always used to hear, like coming up in church, is that God looks at the heart. God knows your heart. And I think the thing that people can hear, even when you hear a Krungbin song or a Krungbin record, you can hear the heart of the people that are playing the music through the music. And I think the people that really support us, the people that know us, you know, the people that love Krungbin, they love the music, but you can't love the music without loving, you know, the heart of what it's coming from and the place that it's coming from. So, I mean, the people that know us, they know our intentions and they know we don't have any ill intentions or we're trying to be something that we're not. You know, we've been saying it and it doesn't really matter how many times you say it. I mean, we've said it a ton of times, but I mean, that stuff still comes up every now and then. But the one thing that we used to get all the time is like, how did you guys meet? Because no one could really understand how three people that don't look like each other can end up in the same band making music together. And the one thing we'd always tell them is like, you know, this happens all the time in Houston. Houston is, you know, it's a multicultural city. We all have friends from other cultures and other races, you know, here. And it's a common thing. you know, things blend.
For anyone that's never been to Houston, and you know, maybe if you've been to LA, it's just so much. I really got the feel of LA when I was in Houston, where it's just like there's so much going on here culturally. You know, it's so diverse and almost less segregated than LA, it feels like, in a way, just from, you know, having been there a few times. Like, it feels like everyone's just sort of mixed on top of each other a bit more.
Bro, we all hang out. We hang out here. Like, everybody hangs out with everybody here. Yeah, that's how we get down.
I love my band. I love Mark and DJ. Feel very, very lucky to have found them in my life and for them to have agreed to be in my band.
It's ultimately, this music's meant to bring people together, not to, you know, pull people apart. It's not meant to be divisive.
You guys were so, there's kind of this dual sort of thing happening in your band where you're sort of equal parts ambitious and sort of equal parts sort of let things happen as they happen. There's no part of you guys that feels a little insecure right now, not being able to tour, not being able to maybe do, just in terms of keeping any momentum going or...
I feel like we're not supposed to be here anyway. So, I mean, if it all ended today and the momentum all died, we had a great time. I mean, like, we're the band that did everything wrong, literally. I mean, we picked a name that no one could pronounce. We recorded in a barn, didn't use a click track. One of them doesn't...
Didn't have words.
Yeah, we don't have words. One of the members doesn't wear a wig. It's like we did it all wrong. And and somehow, you know, people heard what we were doing and they gravitated to it. And we're extremely grateful for it. And I'm of the mindset that everything happens for a reason and there's always a plan. And you just have to follow it and walk in it. And I think that's the biggest lesson that everyone learned in 2020 so far, halfway through it. You know, you all realize that we're not in control.
Cool. Well, thanks for doing this, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks to Laura, Mark, and DJ from Krungbin for getting together to talk shop with me. Hopefully, they'll be back together on stage soon. You can hear all of our favorite Krungbin songs on a playlist at BrokenRecordPodcast.com. And be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel at YouTube.com/BrokenRecordPodcast. There you can find extended cuts of our past episodes and also new ones. Broken Record is produced with help from Leah Rose, Jason Gambrell, Martin Gonzalez, Eric Sandler, and is executive produced by Mia LaBelle. Our theme music's by Kenny Beats. Broken Record is a production of Pushkin Industries. And if you like Broken Record, please remember to share, rate, and review our show on your podcast app. I'm Justin Richmond. Peace.